Good evening. I hope you are all well tonight. As most of you know, I earn my living in a classroom, and I begin the semester. I go to class and I say, "Well, how is everybody today?" And it's always, "Oh, we're good." And about this time of the semester, it's, "How is everybody today?" And it's, "We're tired." Well, I'm kind of expecting a response like that when I say, "How is everybody this evening?" I don't know if you're tired or not, but if you are, there is a rest promised from God that we will hopefully be able to achieve. I will hope that for you. And God has given us promise about rest. And in the meantime, maybe there's lots for us to do that may make us a bit tired occasionally. But that's okay. That's part of the life that God has created for us. You know the expression, "a man on a mission"? Have you heard that expression? I hear that occasionally. I've been told that I look like a man on a mission. This seems to happen maybe sometimes at Walmart. I've run into some of you at Walmart a time or two. I'm looking for Steve Gilley, and I don't see Steve right now, but I saw Steve at Walmart a few days ago. I don't know if I look like a man on a mission. He looked like maybe he was. You know, you don't want to stop and talk too long to somebody who's on a mission. I was looking the other day for grape jam. Grape jam. I don't know where they had it hidden. I know where it was the last time I bought some, I think. Or maybe it was one of those other Walmarts I was in the last time. And so maybe, I don't know, but I couldn't find the grape jam. And there was the apple butter. That was the orange marmalade. That was the Smucker's blackberry jam, the seedless variety. I couldn't find the grape jam I wanted. And I find myself occasionally, I'll be out at a place like that, and my attention is focused on something I'm trying to accomplish, and I'm vaguely aware that maybe there are some other people in the aisle around me. And then the next thing I know, I hear somebody speak my name. And I look around, and the guy I've been standing right next to for the last 3 minutes is somebody that I've known for 25 years. But, you know, my focus is on something else. And he'll say, "You look like a man on a mission here." So I guess sometimes we're like that. I have this wish. It's not going to happen, but I wish that I could have been one of those people that knew Jesus in the flesh, in this life. We read about people in the Bible that knew Jesus in the flesh, in this life. What would they have seen? When they saw Jesus, would they have seen a man on a mission? I think they would have seen a man on a mission, the way we use that expression in our life. When you read about Jesus, you read in the Gospels about the life that he lived and the things that he did while he was here, you see a man who was focused on a mission that he had to achieve, something that it took his attention away from everything else. The world is full of stuff. I mean, you know, it's full of stuff, all kinds of stuff to take our attention from day to day, from week to week, all kinds of things to take our attention. And you look at Jesus in the New Testament, and, you know, it was like 2,000 years ago, and we imagine that somehow life 2,000 years ago must have been very, very different from our lives. And I suppose in some ways it was. They didn't have smartphones, and they didn't have automobiles, and they didn't have all, you know, the technology that we have. There are things about their government that's different from ours. But they were people just like us, and they lived lives just like ours, and they had a world around them, just like we have a world around them, that could take their attention away from where their attention needed to be focused. And you see Jesus, and you see Jesus being one who was not distracted. He didn't let himself be distracted by the things of the world that were going on around him. He was a man on a mission. I'd like to look at a passage in the book of Luke. We'll look at other passages in Luke tonight. You might want to turn to the Gospel of Luke. Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10, verse 38. Now, as they were traveling along, he entered a certain village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. And she had a sister called Mary, who, moreover, was listening to the Lord's word, seated at his feet. But Martha was distracted with all her preparations, and she came up to him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Then tell her to help me." But the Lord answered and said to her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things, but only a few things are necessary. Really, only one, for Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her." There's so many things to distract your attention. But Jesus says, it's interesting the way he says this. He says, only a few things are necessary. How few? Well, really, only one. There's one thing that is necessary. It was really necessary for me to get the grape jam. I can imagine all kinds of other things that are necessary. No, they're not necessary. Jesus says there's one thing that's necessary. And he says here that Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. He doesn't actually say here exactly what is that one thing that is necessary. But I think he implies it. The one thing that was necessary for Mary and for Martha was what Mary had chosen, as opposed to what Martha had chosen. And Mary had chosen to sit at the feet of the master, the teacher, and listen to the words that he had to proclaim. And at least at that time, on that occasion, that was one thing that was necessary. And that was to hear the word that the master was speaking. I don't know how much Mary understood about just who Jesus was at this time. We see descriptions of his interaction with his closest of followers throughout his ministry. And they seem so often to really misunderstand so many things about who Jesus was and what he was here to do. You see Peter in the garden when Jesus was being arrested, and Peter whips out his sword and is ready to defend Jesus from being arrested and ultimately being killed. And Peter didn't understand that Jesus was here for this purpose, to die this death. Peter didn't really understand. By this time, he had come to understand that Jesus was the Messiah. But he didn't really know what that meant, I don't think. Not yet. Not at that time. There were people who tried to take Jesus on one occasion to make him king, and he wouldn't have it because he wasn't going to be a king like they imagined he would be a king. They had this view of what his mission was about and what was necessary, and I suppose they were imagining that he was going to be the one who's going to ride in on the white horse, waving the sword and defeating the Romans and restoring an earthly throne. That seemed to be what many of them were expecting of him. And when they came to make him a king, he didn't want any part of that. Now, he would be a king. He is a king. He is on his throne, even as we speak tonight. But not the kind of kingdom that they were expecting. I don't know what she actually understood about who Jesus was, but she could see this, that he had a message that was more important than any preparing of a meal that she might be engaged in at this time. There is one thing that is necessary. Jesus lived his life like that. There is one thing that was necessary. He could have had anything in this life. There are some people now in our society, I suppose there have always been people like this, but there are people now that have wealth beyond what I can even comprehend. I'm thinking of some of the people in our generation, in our age, that have accumulated a tremendous amount of wealth in the computing and internet and tech-related industries. I'm thinking of people like Bill Gates, who at least for a time was believed, and probably so, was the richest man in the world. Now I understand it's Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world of Amazon fame. And they say that Bill Gates would have more than he did, except Gates has given away so much of his. And then there are others like Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, and these men have tens of billions of dollars. I can't really comprehend that kind of wealth. Jesus could have had everything. I don't know who is the richest man in the world right now. I suppose maybe it's Jeff Bezos. I'm not sure what that even really means. But Jesus could have had everything, and if he were interested in the physical wealth of this world, he could have had it all. Right. In fact, Satan tempted him with that in the wilderness during that 40 days of temptation. Satan tempted him with having the wealth of the world. But you see how Jesus lived his life. How did Jesus live his life? You want to know how to live your life? You want to know what that one thing that is necessary is? Look at Jesus and look how he lived his life. How did Jesus live his life? How much did he have in the way of the material goods of this world? And I think you know the answer to that. He had, like, nothing in the material goods of this world, even though he could have had if he had chosen to. He was, who is this preacher that's going around here teaching? Who is that guy? Oh, I know him. He's that carpenter from Nazareth. That's who he is. He was a carpenter from Nazareth. How much money did carpenters have? I'm suspecting not a lot. He was a peasant, we would say. And you know that saying, that thing that he said one time about how the birds of the air have nests and the foxes have holes, and then he referred to himself the way he so often did as the Son of Man, and he said the birds of the air have nests and the foxes have holes or dens to live in, and the Son of Man, I don't even have a bed to sleep in. He said, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Jesus was a man with a mission. He was focused on what he was here to achieve. In his mission, what was his mission? What was he focused on? We can say some things that it wasn't, for sure. We can say that it wasn't the acquisition of wealth. We can say that it wasn't the acquisition of power as the world, like political power, as the world measures power. We've already observed that he did not want to be a king the way they wanted him to be a king, although he could have been if he had chosen to. He was uninterested in politics and the world of political might and political power, and the world of wealth was not important to him. He tells us, he didn't tell Mary on this occasion specifically what was that one thing of his focus, but he does tell us that in other places. This is another passage in the book of Luke, Luke chapter 19. Luke chapter 19. This is the incident where the little short man Zacchaeus had climbed up into the tree to see him passing by, and Jesus speaks to Zacchaeus and says, I'm going to come to your house today. And Luke chapter 19, verse 9, and Jesus said to him, to Zacchaeus, today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. Jesus was a man with a mission, and I think he tells us right here what his mission was. This is what he was about. He came to seek and to save the lost. And anything else was a distraction to him. And he didn't let other things distract him from his mission. He came to seek and to save the lost. Mary chose the good part because Mary chose the part that would lead to her salvation. That was the good part, and that was the part that was all about Jesus' reason for being here in the first place. Mary chose to listen to the word of God. I don't know if she fully understood that's what she was doing. I think she did later. We don't know what came of Mary after Jesus' crucifixion, after his resurrection, after the gospel was proclaimed, and on into the coming weeks, months, years. What happened to Mary? What kind of a person did she become? Was Mary one of those early Christians? If I had to guess, I would guess that she was. And she came to understand more fully who Jesus was. And she came to understand more fully that when she chose to not worry about fixing dinner and to be more interested in sitting and listening to the words of Jesus, I think she probably eventually came to realize that she was listening to the words of her own salvation, because she was listening to what Jesus had to say. He was doing on that occasion, he was focused on his mission, and that is seeking and saving the lost. And Mary was one of those, and Martha too. But at least on that occasion, Martha was distracted by other things. She was distracted by things of the world. Fixing dinner is a good thing. I eat dinner just about every day. I ate some today. I plan to eat some more tomorrow. Lord willing, I live to tomorrow. And probably the day after that. I don't mean to criticize, being engaged in the activities of fixing something to eat. That's a good thing. But when you have an opportunity to sit at the feet of the Lord himself in the flesh, come on his mission to seek and to save the lost, if you understand your opportunity, how could you pass that up? How could you pass that up? I would like to think, we don't know what came of Martha either, but I would like to think that Martha too came to understand, and she was one of those early Christians in the church there that we read about in the New Testament. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. One thing is necessary, he said to Mary. Let me ask you this. What about you? I think what he said to Martha is the same thing he would say to you in your life. If you could sit at his feet, He would look at you, and he would look at the things that you've got around you that are distracting you, and he would say, there's one thing that's necessary. Our world tells us all kinds of stuff is necessary. It's necessary to get a good education. It's necessary to have a good job. And if you're in certain kinds of jobs especially, it's necessary to work at advancement on that job. And if you don't, you'll be looked down as a lesser employee if you're not working hard to advance yourself in your job, to achieve a position of higher, of greater authority, of greater power in your company, to get greater salary. This is who you're supposed to be, and this is what you're supposed to do. This is what the world around us tells us. I've had people tell me sometimes that there are certain things that you just have to do. I had a friend, a close friend of mine, tell me one time, sometimes, you know, you have to lie. It's necessary sometimes to lie when you're in this or that situation. Is it necessary to lie? You know what? It's not necessary to lie. Are you hungry? I don't mean just because you haven't eaten your dinner tonight yet, but I mean really, seriously, pathologically hungry, like many people in the world are. You didn't have enough to eat yesterday or the day before that or all this month or maybe ever. And you're really seriously hungry. Food is necessary, isn't it? We would say. And I don't mean to say that hunger is a good thing. Hunger is not a good thing. And I don't mean to say that if you see someone around you that's hungry, you ignore it. Because the notion of sharing what you have with others who are in need is a strong part of Jesus' teaching and how we relate to each other. And so when you see another person hungry and you have food to eat, you need to share with them. This is part of Jesus' teaching. That's the disclaimer. There's another lesson about that that's not tonight's lesson. But I know this. Jesus told a parable about a man who was hungry. You know the parable of the rich man and Lazarus? Jesus talked of a man who was hungry. All he could hope for is to have a few crumbs that fell from the rich man's table. Is food necessary? You read that parable and you see what happened to those two individuals, the rich man who had everything he needed and the poor man Lazarus who just hoped for a crumb. And Lazarus died, and so did the rich man. And we see who had what was necessary, that one thing that was necessary. And Lazarus had faith in the Lord, and he went to be with the Lord. It's his life after this life is described as going to be in the bosom of Abraham. And to the Jewish audience Jesus is speaking to, that would especially seem like a great and comforting thing as they look to Abraham as their great ethnic and cultural and spiritual father. And Lazarus went to be in the bosom of Abraham. Is food necessary? Well, there's a sense in which, yes, it is to keep one alive in this life, but there are more important things than keeping one alive in this life. Think about these things as you think about how you plan your day tomorrow and throughout the coming week. One thing is necessary, Jesus says, and you can let yourself be distracted by all kinds of stuff. The day is going to come when all of that stuff you're going to recognize means nothing to you. I see people engaged in all kinds of things. I see people in the pursuit of wealth to the exclusion of everything else in their lives. I see people pursuing power you know, this is, Washington is full of people like that. Maybe Frankfurt is too. But I definitely see it in Washington. People who are pursuing power, they have a single-minded devotion to the concept of more and more power for themselves. And one day they're going to be dead. I can think of some people that were like that who are dead and gone. You think of the politicians of our age who have had that blind ambition to pursue positions of power and influence in the government, and how many of them are still living, and how many of them are dead and gone. And, you know, you can just name any one of them. Who do you think were the great presidents of your life? I can think back. I'm old enough that I actually remember when John F. Kennedy was president. Now, I know some of you can remember back before that. Okay. I remember when John F. Kennedy was president, and I remember the presidency of Kennedy and Johnson and Nixon and so forth and so forth. And some of them, some of the presidents we've had, I've thought were good presidents, and they held to policies that I would approve of and agree with, and some of them not. You know, it's kind of a mixed bag when we're talking about politics. But presidents come and presidents go, and that president of decades ago that I thought was so good, it's now decades later, and we hardly even remember them, let alone the influence that they may have on our government and our lives today. And those who pursued so much wealth and power of days gone by, today we recognize that those pursuits were really meaningless in the long run. One thing is necessary. I don't know what you're pursuing in your life. I hope you are pursuing one thing that is necessary. Jesus said he came to seek and save the lost. That's necessary because we are all lost. Right? You are lost without Jesus. Part of the problem that Jesus had in his preaching and teaching, and we can see this throughout his experience, especially with the Pharisees, is their lack of recognition that they were lost. Left to their own devices, they were lost. Left to the lives that they were living, they were lost. And they didn't want to hear that. And when Jesus pointed it out to them and made it abundantly clear, that's when they started thinking, we have to kill this guy. But they were lost, and they needed to understand that. Jesus told the parable of the Pharisee and the publican that were standing on the street corners, somewhere in public. I imagine street corners, somewhere in public. And the Pharisee is praying to God. They're both praying, and the Pharisee is praying to God, and he's saying, God, I thank you that I'm a holy and righteous person. I'm paraphrasing here. I thank you that I'm a holy and righteous person, that I'm so much better. You know, I give alms to the poor, and I live a righteous life, and I'm better than this publican that's praying over here. And the publican is not even willing to raise his eyes to heaven, beating his breast and saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And he's the one that the Lord approved of. The problem was they didn't understand what was necessary. There's one thing that is necessary, and that's salvation. And you have to understand that you need salvation before you can accept the fact that that's a necessity, don't you? You need to understand that. I hope we understand that. I don't know how you view yourself. When you get up in the morning and look at yourself in the mirror, what do you see? When you think about the people around you and you compare yourself to them, what do you see? Do you look in the mirror and see a holy and righteous person because of the way, I go to church? I don't do these really bad things that some people I know have been doing. The world around me thinks I'm a pretty good person. When you look in the mirror, is that what you see? Are you grateful to God that you're not like other men? Are you like that Pharisee or you like that publican? Do you look in the mirror and thank the Lord every day for his mercy and his love that he has offered you his son, who is single-mindedly focused on one thing, and that's seeking and saving you because you're the lost? It's easy to be distracted by other things. I used to hear my dad use this expression that, let me get the whole thing out before you misunderstand it. It's easy to misunderstand. He used to use, I've heard him use the expression, acceptable worldliness. Acceptable worldliness. Talking about brethren, talking about people he knew, talking about Christians who are practicing what he called acceptable worldliness. Understand that when he said acceptable worldliness, he wasn't talking about what's acceptable to the Lord. He was talking about what we tend to say is acceptable. I don't know what the word worldliness means to you. When I was a kid growing up and going to Bible classes and such, occasionally kids would ask questions about this or that practice that our friends were engaging in, and we say, well, is that something that we can do, that we should do as a Christian? And very often we would, the response would be to turn to a passage in the scripture that says something about not being worldly or not practicing worldliness. And I kind of got the impression that worldliness was about, by the way, when you're a kid, especially as you get to a certain age and the hormones start pumping, worldliness starts involving matters of morality. And I got the impression that that's what worldliness was. Worldliness is just, living a really immoral kind of a life. That's worldliness. I think there's another kind of worldliness, as my dad was talking about when he talked about acceptable worldliness. There are the people that we have among us, and, maybe you are one, maybe I am one. I need to look at myself carefully. But we find ourselves involved, focused on all kinds of things that are matters of the world, that are not in themselves wrong. There's nothing wrong with working to earn a living. It's a good biblical principle to work to earn a living. There's nothing wrong with having friends and engaging in activities of recreation with your friend. We see Jesus even going to a wedding feast. Went to a party, we'd call it, maybe, a wedding party. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. But recognize the things of the world versus the things of God. I have known so many people in churches. I can think of certain individuals. I could name names, but I won't. Some of them are people you know, and you can think of people you know as well that maybe I know or maybe I don't. But people that have been, they come to church, put that in air quotation marks. We see them every time the doors are open. They're very maybe successful in the affairs of men. I'm thinking of individuals I know of, have known of in times, who are very successful in the affairs of men, highly educated, highly accomplished in their professions. Maybe they've made a lot of money. Maybe they haven't made a lot of money, but they've achieved a position, prominence in the community. Maybe they hold some kind of elective office in the community. And they're Christians. They're in the church. And you look at how they live their lives and how they spend their time. And so much of their time is spent on these other things. Not in themselves bad, but things of the world that they let distract them from that one necessary thing, and that salvation through the blood of Jesus. Some of the people I'm thinking of, on the surface, they appear to be, as far as I can tell, dedicated Christians, servants of the Lord. But as time passes and I see, I'm thinking of the children that they have raised. And I see they've raised a family of children, 1, 2, 3, 4 more children. And those children grow up and become adults themselves. And some of the individuals I'm thinking of had a number of children, and not a one of them's a Christian. And they've grown up with parents that were very devoted and dedicated to achievement in the things of the world. And they've seen that in their parents. And they go to church. Yeah, they went to church on Sunday. But have they seen their parents engaged in Bible study? Have they seen their parents being dedicated to service to the Lord such that that is their focus and the other things are just distractions? That's what my dad was talking about when he was talking about acceptable worldliness. It's fine to have a good job. It's fine to, you know, do well in your job. And it's fine to have a good salary in and of itself. But if you let that, as a matter of the things of the world, distract you from knowing and serving God, then you've missed that one thing that was needful, that one thing that was necessary, that Jesus was speaking of when he was speaking to Mary and Martha. And what a tragedy it is. There's a lot of preaching these days, and you look at churches across our town, there's a lot of preaching going on in a lot of churches that has missed the point of Jesus and who he was. If you ask people what Jesus was about, you see them describing Jesus as a social revolutionary. You see him describing Jesus as a social justice warrior of some kind. There are some who even would suggest that Jesus was, in fact, trying to be some kind of a political leader in his day. I've heard all of these kinds of things said. They've ignored what Jesus said about himself, and that he came to seek and to save the lost. Okay? There are churches engaged in all kinds of activities to bring in a lot of people. Large numbers. I don't know if you think of this as a large church or a small church. Compared to some churches, I know this is quite large. I know some churches that have like fewer than 20 members, maybe even fewer than that. I've seen churches that have maybe 5 or 6. So maybe quite large compared to some. Quite small compared to some. You know of churches that have hundreds of members. And if we look across the world, there are churches with thousands. There are churches with tens of thousands of members. And they're all about getting the numbers and bringing the people in. And they fill the pews and they fill the stadiums that they meet in, the basketball arenas that they meet in. And they've got a lot of people there. But they're not preaching the gospel of Jesus, seeking and saving the lost. Churches lose sight sometimes of that one necessary thing. And that necessary thing is the gospel of Christ that will save you from your sins so that you can go be in the bosom of Abraham like Lazarus did. Food is not necessary. A good job is not necessary. Money is not necessary. One thing is necessary. That's salvation through the blood of Jesus. So I want to encourage you to think about these things. On the last Sunday of the year, you may recall, those of you who are here, recall that I spoke and talked about the passage of time, and I made a promise, Lord willing, that I'm still here, and I can keep the appointment, that I'll speak again about that on the last Sunday of this year. We're about a quarter of the way into that year. You may remember that I mentioned a little Japanese lady. Kane Tanaka is her name. And at that time, she was, when we had that lesson, she was about 3 days away from her 116th birthday. Well, I'm pleased to report that as of this afternoon, when I was checking on the internet, she's still living. She made it to 116 and a bit past. I don't know if she'll make it to the end of the year or not. But I don't know if you're going to make it to the end of the year or not either. I told you in that lesson about 3 months ago that I was going to ask you how you spent this year. Think about what are your plans for this year. This is just a little sort of a progress suggestion here. Think about it. Are you spending the year the way you thought you might? Are you spending the year dedicated to the gospel of Jesus, dedicated to pursuing that one necessary thing to the exclusion of all other distractions? You need to be thinking about that, not just for the year, but every day when you get up in the morning. Think about today, how am I going to pursue that one necessary thing today? And pursuing the gospel of Jesus. And you may have to set some things aside. You may have to set aside some things that the world would tell you, you need to be doing this. No, you don't need to be doing this or that thing in the world. Maybe it's something that is overtly, abjectly immoral, or maybe it's something that the world finds us, and maybe even ourselves would find very acceptable in many ways. But if it is distracting you from that one essential thing, then you need to put it aside. You need to get it out of your life so that you can be a full and dedicated follower of the Lord, and the day will come when you will be glad that you did. And that day may come even in this life, but if it doesn't come in this life, it will certainly come in the life to come. How are you doing today? We're tired. There is a rest. The book of Hebrews talks about the Sabbath rest that the Lord offers. And whatever you have to endure in this life, it will one day be over, and you will be glad that you focused your attention on that one necessary thing when that day comes. I encourage you to dedicate your life to the Lord. If we can help you in that, to baptize you into Christ this evening, we would be glad to do that. If we can just help to pray with you and for you and encourage you, we will be glad to do what we can to assist you in a Christian walk if you'll come as we stand and sing the invitation song number 817.